Welcome to the Dialogue Studio. This podcast series is hosted by the Ikeda Center for Peace, Learning, and Dialogue. In it, we explore the transformational practice of dialogue and why it is important, especially in this current moment. I'm your host, Lillian Koizumi. In these episodes, you will hear from individuals from all walks of life sharing what dialogue means to them and how they are practicing it in their daily lives. We will also introduce our founder Daisaku Ikeda's philosophy of dialogue and the various approaches and strategies we practice here at the center. For Ikeda, the more severe the challenges we face, the more crucial it is that we persist in dialogue, because dialogue has the power to break down the walls of mistrust, hatred, and division in the hearts of people everywhere. We hope you will join us in this endeavor to transform our world one dialogue at a time. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Dialogue Studio. I'm so excited to introduce our guest today, Roland Joseph, who is a dear friend of the center and also a member of the Non-Killing Security and International Relations Research Committee at the Center for Global Non-Killing. Roland recently completed his PhD in philosophy in conflict analysis and resolution and is actively working to advance his two main interests, non-killing and nuclear disarmament. In our dialogue, Roland talks about the importance of peace education and promoting non-killing, the aspects of Daisaku Ikeda's peace philosophy that inspire him, what it would look like to teach children love instead of war, and what gives him hope at this time. Let's jump into the conversation. So Roland, welcome to the Dialogue Studio. We're so happy to have you here. So I thought first we can have you share your name, what you're currently working on, or you know, your current interests, and then how you first got connected with the Ikeda Center so that our listeners can get to know you a little bit before we jump into the conversation.
Thank you, Lillian, for having me. I have to say hi, how are you? My name is Roland Joseph. I was born and grew up in Haiti, a Caribbean country, you know. So, and I have been in the United States for 10 years. Mm. I would say 10 years. I moved there to in 2013. Mm. And in fact, my journey with the Ikeda Center began in 2018. After completing my master's degree at the University of Massachusetts Lowell. Mm. So after, in fact, I have to say, after a Google search, you know, as a recent graduate in peace and conflict studies, I said, wow, I have to look for organization working in the field of peace and conflict in near Boston. Mm. And that's why I discovered Ikeda Center. Mm. And I saw also an announcement for a dialogue night, which I like a lot, on nuclear weapons at that time. And I said, Roland, you have to participate. You have to attend, because I believe that nuclear weapons is one of the most salient issues facing humanity. Mm. And then for the other part of my questions is what I'm doing now, right? So first of all, I just finished my PhD.
Congratulations.
You know? Thank you so much. I just finished my PhD in conflict resolution and analysis, as you know. And, you know, I'm looking for a job. I'm actively pursuing, looking for opportunities in academia, you know, and such as applying for faculty positions, presenting my research at conferences, and then publishing, you know, publishing my research in academic journals. Another thing that I'm doing is like I'm trying to introduce, you know, I'm from Haiti, as I just said. I would like to introduce peace studies and peace education in some public universities in Haiti via Zoom. I would like to teach this course in Haiti. as you know, Haiti is facing now gang violence and political instability. I would like to introduce those classes, peace education, peace studies in my country now, to some university in my country. So that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, that's so wonderful, Roland. And thank you for sharing. You know, I think we all at the center remember when we first met you and you came to Dialogue Nights. And you know, I think it's rare to meet people who, you know, are so passionate about peace and, and peace education. And so I think when we met you, we were so happy to meet a kindred spirit, you know. And
absolutely. And another thing I would like to add as part of what I'm doing now is my commitment to the community.
Yeah.
My commitment to change the world, to encourage others. Yes. You know, since 2018, I realized that, as Andrea said, the existence of nuclear weapons constitutes, to some extent, one of the most serious, one of the most salient issues facing the planet, facing humanity. And I said, I have to engage in the global movement to abolish those weapons. And I believe that it is crucial, it is fundamental to inform other people, especially Haitian Americans, about the danger, about the risk posed by the existence of nuclear weapons. So that is what I'm doing.
Yeah, that's so exciting, Roland. And you know, congratulations again for finishing your PhD. And as I shared earlier, you know, I think we've enjoyed our friendship with you so much over the years. And one thing that struck me a lot about you, Roland, is that even when facing a big issue, daunting issue like nuclear abolition, you always remain so hopeful. You know, I feel like you're always thinking about what can I do? And it really reminds me of, you know, Mr. Ikeda's philosophy of like, one person can make such a difference. So I would love to talk with you a little bit more about that, maybe a little later. But since you mentioned your PhD, I thought it would be really wonderful for our listeners to be able to learn a little bit more about, you know, what your research was on. So your dissertation topic, as I know, is the challenges and transformative experience of promoting non-killing paradigm to anti-nuclear weapon activists and realists. And so I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about your research and, you know, what motivated you to focus on this theme. And also, if you can just maybe first start with explaining to the listeners, what is this perspective of non-killing? Yeah. What does that mean?
Okay. Two things motivated me to conduct this research on non-killing and nuclear disarmament. First of all, my commitment to the non-killing movement in Haiti since 2004, when I first met my professor, Dr. Max Paul. He passed away, unfortunately. He introduced the concept of non-killing political science to his students. And then I remember he asked a question in class. Is a non-killing global society possible? Or is a non-killing global political science possible? And that is the question raised in the book of Glenn Tipage, the author of Non-Killing Global Political Science. And I have to tell you that Page was inspired by Ikeda too. He mentioned that at the beginning of his book, he said Ikeda was one of his passion, one of his personality who inspired him. So Page asked a fundamental question, a simple question. I mean, like, is a non-killing global political science possible? But his answer is, yes, it is possible to achieve a non-killing global political science or a non-killing global society. And a non-killing global society is a society, from Page's perspective, where there is no weapon designed to take the lives of human beings. He believes in that. So that is the beginning of my passion in using the concept of non-killing. So I I was able to translate his book from French version to Haitian Creole.
Mm.
And then when I moved to the United States in 2013, I promote this concept among students, professors.
Mm.
So that is my passion. I believe, at the beginning, I didn't believe about a non-killing global society.
Mm.
I said, what is that?
Mm.
You know, but now after education, after receiving training from different professors, from different activists, from the Center for Global Non-Killing, I realized that it is possible.
Mm.
Hence, the necessity to educate others.
Mm.
You know, some people need hope. They need education to believe in the in positive change, you know, in meaningful change, you know.
Yes.
Even though there are issues in the society, but we need to educate people to put the strength together, you know, to believe in a society where there is love, empathy, when there is a respect for each other.
Mm.
So that is what motivated me. And the non-killing concept that I knew since 2004. The second thing is the existence of nuclear weapons.
Mm.
The existence of nuclear weapons. 9 countries in the world, including the United States of America, Russia, UK, France, and then what else? 9 countries, North Korea, and India, Pakistan. They put Israel, they put the lives of all human beings at risk of killing. You know?
Yeah.
So at any time, and they use the nuclear war can eliminate the world.
Right.
You know, and then imagine that a nuclear war involving the United States of America or Russia, that will be that will destroy the world.
Right.
You know, so we need to educate people not to be hopelessness, but to take steps in order to eliminate those weapons. So, you know, there are many people who do not know about the existence of this danger, about the existence of those weapons.
Mm.
So that's why I tried to put together non-killing and nuclear disarmament.
Mm.
And guess what? A non-killing activist or a non-killing scholar is someone who believes in a world where there is no weapon to kill. And an anti-nuclear weapon activist is someone who believes in the abolition of nuclear weapons. They think that the existence of nuclear weapons pose problems. And a realist or nuclear deterrence advocates, they believe that the presence of nuclear weapons doesn't pose any problems. So I was curious to know how non-killing scholars, how non-killing activists interact with anti-nuclear weapon activists and nuclear advocates, nuclear deterrence advocates. You know, because non-killing believe in a world where there is no weapon, no killing. And anti-nuclear weapon activists believe only on the elimination of nuclear weapons, but they can be, in fact, for any other weapons, conventional weapons.
Right.
You know, that's why I was curious to conduct this phenomenological analysis.
That's so interesting, Roland, because I think that, I mean, we've talked about this before, but I think this connection you're trying to make is really, really in line with Mr. Ikeda's philosophy or approach to nuclear abolition. And what you said about non-killing, like addressing it from a non-killing perspective, it reminded me of, so he wrote a 2009 nuclear abolition proposal, which you know about as well. And in here, he talks about deterrence.
Yeah.
And he says, at the heart of deterrence theory lies a cold and inhumane readiness to sacrifice vast numbers of people in order to realize one's own security or dominance. And then later he says his mentor, you know, José Toda, he wanted us to address the hidden clause underlying nuclear weapons, which he said represents any conception of security predicated on the suffering and sacrifice of ordinary citizens, and that he's urging us to confront and extirpate such ways of thinking, because without this, no solution is possible. So I really feel like, wow, it really connects with this, you know, his perspective that instead of just abolishing nuclear weapons, we have to abolish the mindset that it's okay to kill
absolutely
anyone, right? So I love that, you know, this is how you're wanting to shed light on this aspect of nuclear abolition, that you know, is not just about abolishing the weapons itself, but the mentality or the mindset of
education,
human beings.
Through education.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. There is one thing that I thought of when you were sharing about how you entered this PhD program and your passion about non-killing. As a young person, like when you were younger, you know, growing up in Haiti, were you always passionate about peace? Like, was it something that as a child you felt strongly about? Or like, how did, because I feel like you're someone who, for me, like when I think about someone who's really passionate about peace and education, like I think of you, Roland.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if it started when you were young, or at what point in your life did you have this desire?
In fact, I can tell you, originally, I am a peaceful man. So I can remember when I was a, you know, I have to tell you that I'm from a very, very modest family. Mm. My mother and my father, they did not have the opportunity to go to school.
Mm.
And they can't even identify the names. And then they can't even write their name. They can't read.
Mm.
But they know that they have to send us to school.
Mm.
So that was, I like to mention that.
Mm.
So, and my mother always saw in me a peaceful man in my family. You know, my mother has, we're in the family of, I mean, 5 children.
Mm.
So they always saw in me that I'm one of the most peaceful men. So I didn't know what peace means.
Mm.
Otherwise, like at the university in Haiti, when my teacher, my professor began to teach peace.
You know,
peace is very complicated to understand, you know, because
yes.
even those who enter war, who kill, they are talking about peace.
Right.
You know, and then I remember the old adage saying that, civis pacem palabellum. Civis pacem palabellum means if you want peace, prepare for war.
Right.
And then I have to change that. We need to change that.
Yes.
Civis pacem, bella pacem. If you want peace, prepare for peace. And there is no way to prepare for peace otherwise by peace education.
Yes.
And peace is not about war.
Mm.
You know, it's not about preparing to kill others.
Right.
We can have, like Paige said, a society in which there is no weapon, in which human beings do not rely on killing others. We can have such a society.
Yes.
And then, you know, to be specific about your question, so I'm originally, you know, I'm by nature a peaceful man. And a human being is not by nature a killer or violent, like they want us to know, you know.
Right.
So the role of education in this is to help others to discover this capacity.
Yes.
The capacity of not to kill.
Yes.
You see what I mean?
Yes.
So that is important, to educate them, to say, yeah, you are not violent as they want you, you know, to know that, you know,
right.
You are not a violent man, you are not a violent girl, you are not a violent woman. You need to put that in their mindset.
Right, right.
And there is no way to put that in their mindset otherwise by educating them.
Yes.
You know, help them discover this capacity. Help them discover that they are not violent by nature. So I wasn't violent. I have not been violent. So I'm not. So I'm sure those who believe they are violent, they can become non-violent.
Yes.
They can become non-killing figures, activists, scholars. you know?
Yeah.
That is the case.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that, Roland.
Yeah.
I think that's such an important narrative to share because I think in the world we live in today, a lot of people feel like humans are inherently mm-hmm. bad or evil.
No.
But, you know, just like Ikeda, he also believed that humans are inherently good and desire
good.
Peace.
Absolutely.
And so I love the way you talked about how we just have to help people discover that. Mm-hmm.
Discovers that. That, yeah.
Capacity in their lives. So thank you so much for sharing that. And so, yeah, maybe this is a good transition to another question I wanted to ask you. You know, we've talked a lot about Ikeda's perspective over the years with you. And I know you mentioned the center's work and him in your dissertation. And so I was wondering if you could share with us some perspectives from Ikeda around peace and nuclear abolition that really resonate with you or have inspired you?
This is a good question. So in fact, I would say the same thing I just said. I mean, so when I first visited the Ikeda Center in 2018, during a dialogue night on nuclear weapons, I learned three things.
Mm.
My conclusion, the power of dialogue.
Mm.
And there was a big discussion, and you divide in different groups.
Mm.
And there were, I don't remember how many groups, maybe 5 or 7 groups discussing dialogue, the power of dialogue.
Mm.
And the second thing is the power of education.
Mm.
The power of education, dialogue, education. And, you know, when you dialogue and when you exchange with others, you learn.
Mm.
And I learned from them.
Mm.
I learned from the conversation when they divided us into groups and discussing about different topics related at that time to nuclear weapons. You know, I learned. And the last thing is the power of hope.
Mm.
And then when you know about the problem, I mean, you can approach it. You can have a clear idea about how to address the problem.
Mm.
And by knowing how to address the problem, you will develop hope.
Mm.
So if you don't know about the issues, so how are you going to develop hope?
Mm.
Just say, okay, there are nuclear weapons. Yes, there are nuclear weapons.
Mm.
Yes, there can be nuclear countries can enter nuclear. There can be a nuclear war at any time.
Mm.
Yes, it can happen.
Mm.
But we have to know that we have the capacity to prevent that.
Mm.
That is the hope.
Yeah.
So there will be, I would say, no change or no positive change without dialogue.
Mm.
Dialogue is key. There will be no change, no positive change without education.
Mm.
Education to change to transform. Mm. There will be no that.
Right.
You know, there will be no positive change without hope.
Mm.
No.
Right.
So to expect something, you have to know it.
Right.
To know it, you have to educate yourself.
Mm.
Educate yourself to, you know, to expect positive things, you know.
Right, right.
So to change it, change it, to transform it, we can, to achieve a world free of nuclear weapons and foster a culture of peace, we need solidarity.
Mm.
Solidarity, I mentioned last time during a webinar with Gerson and Dr. Gerson.
Yes.
Yeah, I mentioned solidarity and I cited I think Ikeda mentioned solidarity.
Yes.
So we need solidarity among all nations on the planet. So to get this solidarity, we need to dialogue.
Mm.
It's not going to happen like that. Education is key. Dialogue is key.
Mm.
And we will hope together.
Mm.
And then Ikeda emphasizes that the urgent need for global citizenship and solidarity in addressing issues such as the existence of nuclear weapons. His call of solidarity with all kinds of people, including ordinary citizens, to become agents of change, I would say, resonates, as you mentioned, deeply with my perspective. So that's it.
Wow. Thank you, Roland. I, you know, Ikeda, of course, talks a lot about dialogue, education, and hope. And I think the way you explained it, you know, it just made me realize once again that they're all interconnected. You know, these three aspects that, you know, through dialogue, we learn from each other, you know, education, right? And through education, we actually can have hope. And that's, again, such a hopeful perspective, because I think many people don't see the value in education these days, you know, but what kind of education, right? It's educating ourselves so that we can, you know, as Ikeda says, he talks about us really developing the capacity to confront reality head on. But from there, through dialogue and solidarity, find the way to move forward together.
Absolutely.
So, yes, even in talking to you here, I have, you know, we've been working on nuclear disarmament for so long now, but there are days when I feel like, is this really possible? You know, but even just my dialogue with you now.
Yeah, it is possible.
Yeah, I can see. No, it is possible. So this is so important.
It's possible. And Ikeda teaches me to stand for positive action and never lose hope.
Yeah.
And that is the center.
Right.
And then when I came here, and the way you welcome me or your colleagues is incredible. You know, you don't know me. I just sent an email and then I attended the dialogue night years ago, 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And then you welcome me and you put me in the group, you educate me, you share books with me. That is the change, the beginning of the change, you know? And then, we have to keep educating others.
Right. Yeah, and being in dialogue. Yeah, yes. I love that. You know, I think we've talked about, Ikeda often says, hope is a decision. So I think you really embody that role. And, you know, you're deciding to have hope, right? Even when things can seem hopeless.
Exactly.
You continue to do that. And I love about, you know, this positive action, because I think, as you said earlier in the episode, you're trying to take action however way you can. And so I know recently you organized this event, right, called Educating the Haitian Diaspora on the Threat of Nuclear War. And you talked a little bit about this earlier, right? Your desire to really educate, you know, people from your country about the threat of nuclear war. And so I was wondering if you could share with the listeners a little bit about the webinar itself. And then I know you talked about this already, but maybe again, sort of your motivations around organizing this event.
Exactly. Thank you for this question, Lilian. My main motivation was the lack of involvement of Haitian Americans in the movement to abolish nuclear weapons, you know. And I talk to them and I can see that they don't really know about the problems posed by the existence of those weapons. And I assume that they don't know that. So, and in the aftermath of a nuclear war, or the escalation of a nuclear conflict, either between Russia and the United States or any other nuclear weapons, my country will be one of the victims, you know, that will have impact in my country, in the entire world too. You know, Caribbean countries, Latin American countries, you know, European countries, Asian countries, you know, all of the continent will be affected. So I said, Roland, you have to say, you have to do something. So that was in this perspective that I organized this webinar. And you know, there are 2 million Haitian living outside of the country. Most of them, they are in the U.S. And they send billions of dollars to the families back in, to the loved one, back to my country in Haiti. So, you know, in the aftermath of a nuclear war involving the United States of America and Russia, they will not be able to keep or to continue to send them, to send money to support the family back in Haiti. Mm. They will not be able to do that.
Right.
They send $1 billion. So they will be affected directly with those who live in the U.S. And directly because they will not be able to continue to support them without the problem in the climate, the environment, you know. So we are very, very close to the United States. Haiti is very close to the United States. And then Florida, you know, less than 2 hours,
right.
You know, anything happen in the U.S. will affect the entire world, but including Haiti first. That's why I try to educate Haitian American, Haitian people, and other Caribbean nations about this issue, you know. So we are part of the Latin America and the Caribbean, and there was something that called a nuclear weapon free zone. And the 33 countries from the Latin America and the Caribbean, they signed a treaty, you know. And that was a good thing, nuclear weapon free zone. So no country in the Latin America and Caribbean cannot develop or deploy nuclear weapons. So this is a great step for Caribbean and Latin American countries. So I think we need solidarity, and we need education, we need dialogue, we need hope among all nations in order to achieve global nuclear disarmament. And that was what Ikeda emphasized as part of his perspective in nuclear weapons or nuclear disarmament.
Yes. Wow. I'm really moved by your determination to really be in dialogue with people from your country about how we have to come together, you know, to really take a stand for peace. Do you have any experiences you can share with our listeners of how it's been like talking to Haitian Americans about nuclear weapons? Like, what is their general feeling? Or have you had any hopeful conversations or dialogues that have encouraged you?
So they some do not really believe that it will happen, a nuclear war. And they said, that isn't like in utopia and idealistic things. They don't believe that it will happen. But after what is happening, what happened between Russia and Ukraine, and where Mr. Putin raised the possibility of using nuclear war in a conflict, some of my Haitian friends said, they begin to think about it, you know, because Putin was, you know, sure about it. He said he can use tactical nuclear warheads, nuclear weapons in this war, and people began to you know, to be afraid about that. And I remember at a Haitian church in Morlin, where some of my family's family members go, and they a group of officials went there to evaluate the basement in case of a nuclear war. And I think some people become aware about the issue. So I think this is the lack of it. It is good to think that it will not happen, you know. It is a good thing. But we need to put pressure on nuclear leader, nuclear state leaders. I mean, Russia, United States, Israel, all of the country who, possessing those weapons. We need to put pressure on them to raid the arsenals. So, yeah, because they spend trillions of dollars to develop those weapons, and those money, the money they spend to develop those weapons can be used to help other countries in Latin America, in the Caribbean, in Africa, other developing countries in terms of solidarity. We are one. We are all interconnected, you know. So why do you develop weapons just to kill your brothers and sisters? You know, so that is stupid.
That's very true.
Yeah,
It is very foolish. Yeah. Thank you, Roland. And this next question, I think you've addressed it so many times throughout our conversation already, but I think I'll ask you again, you know, as you were just alluding to the war between Ukraine and Russia and just so much conflict around the world, increasingly so, right, year after
Absolutely.
Year. And so we've been talking a lot here about how do we go from this culture of war to a culture of peace, you know? Mm-hmm. So I was wondering if you could share, you know, again, from the perspective of your work on non-killing and just the different dialogues you've been having now, you know, what do you feel like is really needed at this time, you know?
Everything turned on the same thing, you know, education, like I just said, but based on my experience conducting research in non-killing and nuclear disarmament, I believe that we need an interdisciplinary approach to addressing the root causes of killing and violence in the global society. Mm. Yeah, we need that. So the first thing that we need is, as I just said, education. Mm. And sometimes I like to say non-killing peace education.
Mm, yes.
And then we need to make people aware of their capacity, as I just said, to not kill others, to love others. Mm. So we need to teach love at the university, in high school, in elementary school, in professional school, in the community, in organization like a non-profit organization. Teaching love. Love is important. So education is the key to achieving meaningful positive change. Mm. So the second thing I would say is, like, I think dialogue and the culture of to build a culture of peace, we need to focus on constructive dialogue with all kinds of people, ordinary people, people on the street, everywhere.
Yeah,
you know, from different culture, different country, different backgrounds, you know, whether you are at any university. And then you have to, we can dialogue, we can interact with each other. So there will be no meaningful change, as I said, without dialogue, without education. So we need to promote a non-killing paradigm along all nations. I would say non-killing peace education. So this is a transformative approach to challenging the acceptance of violence and killing as a solution to violent conflict or to conflict. So when I say non-killing, it is not only the absence of negative peace in the sense of Galton's perspective, but it encompasses also what we call affirmative non-killing in the sense of positive peace, raised by Professor Galton, who just passed away a few months ago.
Right.
So a positive peace, we fight against social inequality, social injustice. You know, it is not only killing or violence. So we have to consider the social injustice, social structure that created violence or physical violence or, I mean, direct violence. So in general, we cannot build a culture of peace and create a more peaceful and just world for all without a collective commitment to respond to violence and killing, murder in all its dimensions.
Yeah. We just read Mr. Ikeda's 2000 peace proposal, and I actually shared this in our last episode on peace cultures. And he said that peace cannot be a mere stillness, a quiet interlude between wars. It must be a vital and energetic arena of life activity, won through our own volitional, proactive efforts. And he said, peace must be a living drama. So we must continue to take action for peace versus this interlude between wars. You know?
Absolutely.
So, and I love, Roland, what you said about how we have to teach love.
This is important. And I'm not the only one who mentioned that. There's a sociologist from France Edgar Morin, he used to, I mean, he's a prestigious sociologist. I'm not going to say it in French. So he used to advocate for teaching love in different schools, elementary school, high school, university. And, you know, it's about ethics, you know. So we can have that. We can have it in your world, right, where love will be, you know, the basic things for everyone. We can have that through education.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
Ikeda Center.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, thinking about my own education growing up, I never learned about love, you know.
And
Ikeda talks about true love being one that can extend to all of humanity. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I love that vision. Thank you. I have two more questions for you for our episode today. And maybe one question connects more to this idea of teaching young people love, you know, in our schools. And so, you know, we work, as you know, Roland, with many, many young people through the center. And I think it's really, really hard time for young people, for all people, but for youth in general. I think they, you know, see the world, all the suffering in the world, and they want to take action, and they want to believe that they can contribute to, right, building cultures of peace. But I think, yeah, it's just a really challenging time. And I think even for myself, there every day feels like I have to decide again to have hope. You know, every day I have to spur myself to say, I'm going to choose hope rather than despair. And so I was wondering for you, if there's anything you can share with young people today about how they can, continue to contribute to peace, how you sort of challenge your own negativity or maybe hopelessness sometimes. Like, what advice would you give to young people?
Yeah, I would like to invite them or to convey a message. A message of encouragement to them and of empowerment too. Young people, listen to that. You are the future of the humanity. You are the future of the world. And your passion for non-killing peace is a powerful force for positive change, young people. You represent hope in its all forms, in its all dimensions. This is, like you just said, an intrinsic value that you cannot put away, you know, by other or by external circumstances. And your dedication to building a more non-killing, a more peaceful and just world is important for a great future. So you have to remember that your voice matters and your actions should have an impact. And together we can create a world where peace and non-killing will prevail. And that is my message for you, young people. Participate in different dialogue night. It is really good, and that has an impact on me. The power of dialogue, the power of communicating with respect with others, no matter what your color is, no matter where you are from, we are one. What happened in the United States will affect all of us on the planet. You know, what happened in my country will affect the US. What happened in Japan will affect us in the world. What happened in North Korea, in China. We have to develop this solidarity. So when you create this solidarity, when you educate young people from the very beginning, meaning from kindergarten to university, about love, you will have leaders who will love. You will have political leaders who will not rely on weapons to kill others. You will have great leaders at the top of different countries. So we need to start as early as possible. So educating young people, educating ordinary people, is one thing, but we need to educate politicians too. You know,
yeah.
Even though those people will become politicians, you need to do two things at the same time. This is a systemic problem. Yeah.
That was a really powerful message, Roland.
Yeah.
Thank you. And what a great vision to have that you painted for us.
Yeah.
So finally, Roland, we've talked a lot about hope, really. I think hope was a theme throughout our dialogue conversation today. And so for our final question, I was just wondering, you know, what's something that is giving you hope at this time?
Yeah. What gives me hope is the resilience and determination of people who reject hopelessness. That is what gives me hope, despite obviously the challenges and they face in the world, climate change, the risk of using nuclear weapons. You know, there are a lot of people who develop a culture of hope, and I'm one of them, and you are one of them.
Yes.
So we need to get more people.
More of us.
And this Ikeda's perspective on hope resonates, as I just said, with my perspective and with Paige's, Glendy Paige's perspective. You know the power of education. Someone sit down in Hawaii and communicate with someone in Haiti, very, very far away. And I was in Jamel, my professor was in the capital. I didn't know him. But he was influenced by Paige. Paige was influenced by one of, by Ikeda. You see the connection?
Yes.
The power of education.
Yes.
And my professor teaches me, used to teach me that about love, about non-killing, about peace, about Paige's perspective. And Paige taught him about, Ikeda's perspective, the connection. So before April 4, I talk about the solidarity mentioned by Ikeda. So there's a connection between all of the things. Ikeda emphasizes that hope is an intrinsic aspect of human nature, and regardless of external circumstances. So the capacity for hope resides, with each of us. So, and Paige, as I just said, believes that a non-killing global society is possible. It's possible, while others say it is not possible. But he believes. He spent 28 years conducting research, talked to psychologists, talked to political scientists, international relations specialists about this, asking them questions.
Yeah.
And then he came with a simple answer. Yes, it is possible. A simple question with a simple answer, because the complexity of the world. So the work of Paige of Non-Killing is also about hope, in that he believes in a world free of killing is possible. And this is a reality. And the work of Paige, who advocates for non-killing paradigms, inspires hope by offering a tangible vision of a world free from violence, from killing, whether with nuclear weapons or any other weapons. And Paige believes in the possibility of creating, like Ikeda, a society where there is no killing, where there is love. This vision is not merely, idealistic, because it is grounded in practical strategies and actions that can bring about meaningful and positive social, political change.
Wow. Thank you, Roland. I will be going back to listen to that many, many times. And I love that. how your initial response to the question of what gives you hope are the many, many, many people in the world who are rejecting hopelessness every single day, you know. So
yeah.
I'm sure many of our friends listening are doing that right now. And so, yeah, thank you, Roland, for this really wonderful, hopeful, hope-filled dialogue today. And I hope we can have you here again to share more hopeful messages of all the incredible work that you're doing. So thank you so much for joining us today, Roland.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Thank you. I hope you enjoyed my dialogue with Roland. Our conversation gave me so much hope and left me with a lot to think about. I was so encouraged when Roland talked about the role of education in helping us believe that positive change is possible and that a society where there is love, empathy, and respect for each other is possible. Similar to Professor Harong's perspectives in our previous episode, Roland believes that human beings are inherently good and that education is meant to help us discover and develop the capacity to live and act from a place of good, of non-killing, of love. I also loved how he reframed the statement from, "If you want peace, prepare for war," to, "If you want peace, prepare for peace." Finally, I'm inspired by Roland to find ways to teach love, both through our work at the center and also in my daily life. Thank you for joining us in the Dialogue Studio today. If you are interested in learning more about the Ikeda Center for Peace Learning and Dialogue, you can visit our website at ikedacenter.org or follow us on social media at Ikeda Center. Our next episode will be with two incredible nuclear disarmament activists who just happen to be two of my favorite people in this world, Emma Pike and Molly McGinty. Stay tuned to hear about their personal stories, their inspiring work, and also their beautiful friendship. Thank you again, and until next time, happy dialoguing.